chug,
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 chug.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Wizard Staff Podcast. I'm your host, Blake.
And I'm Guy.
And we are two drunk novices who like to talk about EDH. We do drink and swear, so you've been warned. Please drink responsibly when playing children's card games. So tonight, we are going to be finishing up our Modern Horizons 2 set review. We just recorded part 1, now we're going to go straight into part 2. It's going to be great, it's going to be awesome. We're going to be going over the cards that go in the main deck. In the previous episode, we talked about the cards that can be your new commander. So, how do you feel, Guy? You ready for this?
Yeah, I mean, part 1, all the new commanders felt pretty good. Got a lot of interesting things, and I think we got a lot of interesting things here to talk about as well. So I'm ready to just dive right in. We got a couple cycles.
Mm-hmm.
So I forgot to write this in the notes, but I think that there is another cycle worth mentioning before we get too deep into these. So the first notable cycle is actually 10 dual color artifact lands. They all have indestructible, and there's one for each color pair, so there's red, blue, red, green, red, black. Like, everyone got something, and I think those will actually be pretty popular.
Oh, you do?
I think so, because, like, indestructible on a land is pretty good. I was listening to the Commander Theory, you know, shout out to them, but they were talking about, like, a cool idea where it's like, you know, you play a bunch of those, then you do, like, MLD, protect all your lands. So I think that's a pretty good idea. And in Artifact Matters decks too, where you have like affinity for artifacts, those also kind of count as 2 mana for you, because it'll reduce 1 mana because of affinity, and then you'll also be able to like tap them for a mana. So I would say, like, you know, they're not for every deck for sure, but I think they are notable.
Yeah, I thought about including them in the notes. I kind of left them out because I feel like even the synergy of... Like, I agree with everything you said, but I just don't know how many decks really want that unless they're on a budget.
I don't think they're going to be, like, you know, format-defining at all, but I do think that they...
Did want to mention them.
Did want to mention them, and I think that they will see some play. But let's get into the good cards. Or, like, the really good cards, I guess. So... This first one is a cycle of evoke cards. So the other thing I guess we didn't mention about Modern Horizons is that there's a bunch of keywords from previous sets so that we get to like see.
There's a whole lot of them. There's a whole lot. So I didn't even
bother. Yeah, I mean, we should have, but like whatever.
Nah.
But okay, so this one that we want to talk about is the evoke cycle. And so if you need a refresher on evoke is... on a creature, and it's an alternative casting cost, so you can pay the cost. The creature enters the battlefield, it'll have an enter the battlefield trigger, but then you have to sacrifice it too. So it enters, get the trigger or ability, and then sacrifice the creature. And there's a mythic cycle, one for each color, where all of them have like evoke and then exile a card from your hand depending on the color of the card. So for example, Solitude, which is 3 white creature elemental incarnation, flash lifelink, when Solitude enters the battlefield, exile up to one other target creature. That creature's controller gains life equal to its power. And so evoke, exile a white card from your hand, and Solitude is a 3/2. So this is a free source of Plowshare. I do think that this is very strong, especially in like a mono white inclusion, but I also think that this is worthwhile in decks where you want to blink a lot, because with this creature on the field, before you have to sacrifice it, if you get to blink it, you can, you know, blink it, comes back, you get another ability, but you get the ability again and you don't have to sacrifice it that time. So, yeah, Swords to Plowshare is the most played card in EDH behind Sol Ring. So,
oh, yeah?
Yes. This is pretty good for mono white at least. I don't know if you want to play this much in just like any deck that runs white. So mono white, I think definitely slam dunk, let's go. But then blink strategies, yeah. So solid include, I think this is a solid white card.
Yeah, because you definitely, I agree, like it needs to, it's best in mono white. Like you start to struggle if like you start going into like two colors where one of them is white, because maybe you don't have that additional white card you need to evoke it, because that's probably what you're going to do, like, mostly, because you're wanting this as a removal spell. Like, it's not like you can run this in, like, your five or four color deck like you can with Source of Plowshares.
No.
Like, this is really this truly is, like, benefiting, like, more, like, mono white decks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the other thing, too, about this cycle is it's kind of, like, taking place of the free cycle that we got in Modern Horizons 1, which was very popular.
Mm-hmm.
Force of Negation, Force of Vigor, those are the two most notable ones, but those are very good. But I think a lot of these, as well, with the added benefits of being creatures, is going to be nice.
I think we both agree that this white one of the cycle is the best one. Do you, like, even want to read any of the other ones, or, like, quickly say what they do?
I mean, we can quickly say what all of them do, I guess. Because, yeah, the white one's definitely the best one. You got blue, which is Subtlety, which, when it enters the battlefield, choose up to one target creature, spell, or planeswalker. Its owner puts it on the top or bottom of their library. Again, like, it's okay in decks that want to blink this a lot. I think the downside to this, though, is, like, it has to be a spell. So it's when it's on the stack. It's not a hard counter.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, it's okay. You got Grief, which is the black one. It enters the battlefield. Target opponent reveals their hand. You choose a non-land card from it. That player discards that card. So it's kind of like Thoughtseize. Still, once again, I mean, I think this one is actually going to be stupid good and modern. The set that, you know, this is made for.
But we don't care about that. It's, like, kind of mediocre and, like,
I'd say this is, like, middle. Or, no.
Yeah.
That might be debatable. Red one is, unfortunately, the worst one, in terms of EDH, at least. So when it enters the battlefield, it deals 4 damage divided as you choose among any number of target creatures and or planeswalkers. Though, I actually really like this just because I joke a lot with Purphoros, saying, like, you know, I should run Lightning Bolt just to, like, kill problematic creatures.
Hmm.
And this kind of is actually going to take that place now. Because then, you know, enters the battlefield, deal 2 damage to each of my opponents, and get rid of a couple mana dorks, or, you know, Entrancers. So yeah.
Hey.
Pretty good. And Endurance, the last one. When it enters the battlefield, which is the green one, I've been going in Wooburg order, just so everyone knows as well. So enters the battlefield, up to one target player puts all cards from their graveyard on the bottom of their library in a random order. I've seen people say, like, oh, this is the worst one because, you know, like, who cares? But I think that this one is actually going to be really good on the meta. Because, like, if you have someone who depends a lot on, like, Yawgmoth's Will, Replenish, Underworld Breach, a Madrolfa, Jared, Marin, Kessig, Tasigur, the list can go on for a little bit, but playing these to then put the graveyard back into the deck, pretty good.
So, I'm not sure we stated it. We should be clear that the white one, blue one, and this green one have flash, so they can be played at instant speed. Whereas the red one and the black one are sorcery speed. So that's why I was kind of surprised when you said, like, you'd be willing to put the red one in place of, like, a lightning bolt, because it's sorcery speed, that creature.
I mean, yeah, that's just me, though, because...
Okay.
I mean, I don't want to get too specific, because that just goes into, like, me talking about my deck, but...
Right. We can move on to the next cycle, if you'd like.
Yeah, let's go.
Alright, so this is the suspend cycle. Again, one for each color of magic. And we'll start off with Resurgent Belief. So it has suspend 2, and then you pay 1 and a white. And you get to return all enchantment cards from your graveyard to the battlefield. So I love enchantments. I play enchantments all the time. And this is basically replenish. Replenish is the same effect, but for 4 mana. And you get it right away. So this is... And replenish is on the reserve list, so they can't ever like reprint replenish. So they've always been like making various versions of the effect on other cards throughout the years. So like the nice part about this is that it's only 2 mana instead of 4, but you have to wait like 2 turns before you get this effect. So it's really like broadcast to all of your opponents. It's not going to, it doesn't have as much like. And then he played replenish, and then just like his whole board state came back, and he just like swung out and like just like annihilated all of us out of nowhere. Like your opponents are going to see this coming, so they can like there's a chance that they can prepare for this, and that's the struggle for me. Like yes, it's really low mana, but like your opponents are going to see it. Like it is arguably one of the best options for like mass enchantment recursion because like there's Open the Vaults, Kalamax, Destiny's Hands Ultimate, then there's Estrid's Ultimate, and then there's like Retether. I personally run Replenish and a Retether, but Retether only gets auras, whereas Resurgent Belief gets all of them. So like I'm really torn about this card. I think I'll just buy it, like assuming it's less than $5, and I'll try it out, but it's one of the better ones, but it's still like that waiting 2 turns just sucks.
Yeah, it is probably the best one in terms of like mana spent per turns waiting, if that makes sense. Like 2 mana to wait 2 turns, not bad.
That's 1 mana per turn, math.
Yeah, because like typically you would think like more mana for like a quicker kind of thing. So I agree, that's kind of the downside to all the suspend cards that we're going to talk about is like this does... Yeah.
It does take multiple turns. It does broadcast it to your opponents. Yeah.
Yeah. Like this next one, like I didn't even remember, neither of us wrote notes for it. Inevitable Betrayal. Spend 3, 1 blue. So search target opponent's library for a creature card and put that card onto the battlefield under your control. Then that player shuffles. So you do get bribery for a cheaper mana, but again, it is broadcast. To me, like, none of these are really worth it, so I don't want to go too much into it.
Well, I think this next one might be, like, the best of the cycle, and I can explain why.
The one thing, though, about these is just that the best way to take advantage of them is to cascade into them. So if you have, like, a Yidris deck or a First Sliver deck, if you cascade into this, you can then cast it for free and bypass that suspend. So that's good, but it's kind of like... They have a certain home, but... Alright, let's go into this next one, at least.
Right, so this next one is Profane Tutor. Suspend 2, 1, and a black. Search your library for a card. Put that card into your hand, then shuffle. So this is basically Demonic Tutor, staple of the format, but with Suspend 2. Now... Like you were saying, Guy, like you can cascade into it, like maybe you're playing Yidris or First Sliver or something. I have actually heard a few CDH people talk about this in Cody, the Voracious Codex, and how it's going to be really good in that deck. So I don't know how expensive this card will be in terms of price, but this might be, like, assuming the price is low enough and it's within your budget, this might be a budget option. We'll see how like the price actually lands.
I think all of these could serve as a budget option because, you know, bribery is not a cheap card. Replenish isn't a cheap card. Yeah, none of these are necessarily cheap. Like, this next one might be a little cheaper on the list. Okay, so this is Glimpse of Tomorrow. Suspend 3, red. Shuffle all permanents you own into your library, then reveal that many cards from the top of your library. Put all non-aura permanent cards revealed this way onto the battlefield. Then do the same for aura cards, then put the rest on the bottom of your library in a random order. So, this is Chaos World, and I do think this will actually see a lot of play, just because players like that ability a lot. It's cool that it only affects you as well. Just because...
Do you mean Warp World?
Yeah, Warp World. Sorry.
Yeah.
But this is cool because it only affects you, and
less salty. Your opponents will be less salty because it's just you.
Yeah, because you get the effect, they don't, and it's going to be less of a headache to kind of figure everything out, to be honest. So, cool. But this next one, Jesus.
Yeah, this is a Gaia's Will. It's spend 4, and then you pay a single green. Until end of turn, you may play lands and cast spells from your graveyard. If a card would be put into your graveyard from anywhere this turn, exile that card instead. So clearly, it's like a... It's slightly different. It's kind of like Yawgmoth's Will, but for green. And it does a few different things, like playing lands. But I think this card is pretty sick. Like, I think... I don't know. I think it's fun.
Oh, yeah, for sure. But like I said, it's going to go into those decks where... You can cascade into it. Playing the lands from the graveyard is a nice addition, and that does feel very green. It does kind of feel weird that I think it this whole effect with the additional lands kind of got pushed to green instead of this being like the black one. I don't know, maybe they just found that Yawgmoth's Will should have been... Didn't they say Yawgmoth's Will should have been a green card? Isn't that, like, the big debate?
I think it was green and, like, maybe one other color. Like, when Yawgmoth's Will was first made, like, that was part of the question. It's like, is this really a black card? So, I think maybe that's why they're doing it now. And obviously, it's a little bit different because, you know, Yawgmoth's Will is arguably one of the most busted cards ever made. So, yeah, this is fine. In contrast, this is a fine card.
Yeah, but who cares? Because now we got some... awesome white cards. Alright, so we're out of the cycles, and now we're going to go into color by color, and then we'll go into multicolor.
Yeah.
You know, the usual. So, first, we got Esper Sentinel. Just a white. Artifact creature, human soldier. Whenever an opponent casts their first non-creature spell each turn, draw a card unless that player pays X, where X is Esper Sentinel's power. So, a lot of people have been comparing this to Rissic Study, which is somewhat fair, but this is kind of a nerfed version of it, let's be honest. But even like a nerfed version of one of the best cards in Magic, probably still a good card. This is pretty tutorable, since white can go find artifacts. And, you know, you also have like Recruiter of the Guard.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that can go find this. This could easily become another mono-white staple. I highly believe that, and I think that the best decks it'll work with are like white weenie decks where they're pumping their creatures so that this becomes stronger, making the tax higher and less fragile to removal.
Yeah, it's nice that you could in theory pump up the Esper Sentinel's power to make the effect cost more. It's, you know, usually they just say, like, oh, if you pay one or two more, some sort of effect. But, yeah, I think people are just going to jam this into Mono White, jam this into, like, their Boros, jam this where they can if they're really starved for card draw. This is solid. This is, like, pretty much a great example of, like, what people have been asking for.
Yeah, and I think this is also... So, the last time where I feel like we got like a mono white staple was Smothering Tithe. But then Smothering Tithe just kind of became a staple in like most decks that run white. However, I don't think that this is going to be the case for Esper Sentinel, where, you know, any card that, or any deck that runs white will also run this, just because of, you know, it's only getting you one card, maybe, a turn. So, yeah, I don't think it'll see nearly as much play as Smothering Tithe, but if you want to pick one up, pick them up now. Because Smothering Tithe is an expensive card now.
Yeah. Alright, so there's actually two cards that I'm going to read back to back. It's because I don't really think they're that good, but they kind of represent something that I find interesting. So, the first one is Abiding Grace, 2 and a white, enchantment. At the beginning of your end step, choose one, gain one life, or return target creature card with mana value 1 from your graveyard to the battlefield. And then this other card is called Late to Dinner. It is 3 and a white for a sorcery that says return target creature card from your graveyard to the battlefield, create a food token. So, these are both white spells that are recurring creatures, and like neither of them are really good enough to like actually see play, but it's like I think it's a hint to mono white slowly getting more of like creature recursion instead of it just being like in black.
Yeah, I mean, we've had some mono white recursion before, like, you know, Sun Titan is a pretty powerful card,
right?
I'm actually pretty tempted to like try and run Abiding Grace in my mono white deck just because
the one drops.
There's so many. Like, I just started making a list and I was like, oh wait, there's actually like Esper Sentinel. It's a new one. Sarah Ascendant, Giver of Ruins, Mother of Ruins, Thraven Inspector, Weathered Wayfarer, Soul Sisters, so like Soul's Attendant and Soul Warden. There's quite a few options. I do think that Abiding Grace could do some work because you could use your creatures as, you know, blockers, or you can like send them into battle. Maybe they get like chump blocked, bring them back later, maybe get an ETB or something. I don't know. What do you think?
I kind of agree with that. Like, there's a good number of one drop utility creatures in white, some of which that you just mentioned. And so, like, yeah, like, if you have this and Esper Sentinel in play, like, your Esper Sentinel is pretty much always going to be in play. Like, your opponents are always going to have to deal with it, even if they get rid of it with a destruction spot removal spell or something. They'd have to exile it or some other crazy thing.
Okay. I threw this card on just because I actually think... I wanted to talk about it only because I think it's not as good as a lot of people think it is. Search the Premises. It's 3 and a white enchantment. Whenever a creature attacks you or a planeswalker you control, investigate. So you create a colorless clue artifact token with 2, sacrifice this artifact, draw a card.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it's going to be nearly as good just because you have to still spend mana to then sack the clues to draw a card. And I think when you're looking for those explosive turns, you are then hindered by a turn because you're going to sack your clue tokens, get, you know, your draws, but then you're going to be out of mana, and, you know, players are just going to be able to come at you because they're like, oh, they're setting up for something. So, yeah, I'm not high on this card.
Yeah, I mean, it is like mono white card draw, but again, it's just like not really quite efficient enough to see play, I don't think. I mean, again, we compare this directly against like Esper Sentinel, which is just so mana efficient. Even though it's like not a hard draw, it's gonna get you card draw in Commander. So yeah, like it is nice to see WotC designing cards to support white. Some of them are gonna work, some of them aren't. As long as some of them do, come on. Mm-hmm. Alright, we can move on into blue now. And I just wanted to read this next card pretty quick. It is Suspend. It is a single blue mana, that's an instant, that says exile target creature and put 2 time counters on it. If it doesn't have suspend, it gains suspend. So it is comparable to other efficient instant speed blue removal spells, such as Pongify, Rapid Hybridization, and Reality Shift. I'd argue that this is mostly worse than all of the previous three, but if like you're just really looking for that fourth sense of blue instant speed spot removal for a creature, here you go. And I know there's exceptions, like maybe you want to use this on your own creature and it basically will be a super slow flicker.
I mean, yeah, use this on one of those evoke creatures that we were talking about at the beginning to save it from dying or, you know, having to sack itself. So that might be one way in terms of using it on your own creatures as well.
Mm-hmm.
But let's move into black. We got 2 cards that I'm just going to read back to back because I feel like they are also kind of similar. You got Unmarked Grave, 1 black sorcery. Search your library for a non-legendary card. Put that card into your graveyard, then shuffle. And Vial Entomber, 2 black creatures, zombie warlock, death touch. When it enters the battlefield, search your library for a card, put that card into your graveyard, then shuffle. So pretty much 2 different entomb like cards. One's a sorcery that costs 1 more and can get non-legendary cards, And then you have one on a body that you can sack and maybe recur.
Mm-hmm.
I think they're both good budget options.
Yeah, that's pretty much spot on, because Entomb is a bit of a pricey card, and it's like so mana efficient, and it's instant speed, whereas these are not. these are just going to be like more budget options. All right, so the next card we have is kind of a neat card. It is called Dam. Black, black, sorcery, destroy target creature. A creature destroyed this way can't be regenerated, but you can overload it with for two white, white. So you can either basically use it as destroy one creature for two mana or destroy all the creatures for six mana.
No, destroy all the creatures for four mana. So two white, white.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I think it's pretty cool because it's like obviously a reference to like combining both like Damnation and like Wrath of God, it seems, both like in the words and the art. That's the only thing I had to say about it else.
I mean, I think this becomes almost the new best board wipe because it's pretty flexible to just destroy one creature for, and it can be any creature, for two mana, black, black. Or to overload and destroy all creatures. So I think a lot of Orzhov decks could easily take out like a Wrath of God or Damnation and just slot this in, and it's going to be much more efficient.
Or run all three.
I mean, you could run all three if that's what you're trying to do, but like if you only had the slot to put this in for like one or the other, I don't think, I mean, maybe take out Wrath of God because overload. So I guess like you would take out Wrath of God in this instance because the overload is two white white. So you pretty much have Wrath of God stapled onto this one, whereas you don't have Damnation stapled onto this. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I agree with you. It's pretty good.
Yeah, this is a good card. Definitely gonna pick it up. All right, Cabal Initiate, one black. Creature human warlock, discard a card. Cabal Initiate gains lifelink until end of turn. Has threshold, so that means that as long as there are 7 or more cards in the graveyard, you get a benefit. And that benefit would be it gets +1/+2. So 2 mana, discard outlet for free. You know, pretty good. A lot of decks might want to run this. You asked if this is Gitrog viable, Blake.
Mm-hmm.
I said possibly, but I actually think no, because it's black, it's turned off by like Sylvan Tutor and Green Sun for tutoring, and we already have enough discards in Gitrog where I don't think we need this one. So like, maybe, I guess, but like, I don't think it's worth it. No.
I think that's spot on. That's kind of what I heard, but I wanted to ask you as well.
Okay, this next card, Jesus Christ.
Oh god, this was like the boogeyman of this set where people overhyped it. Alright, so this is Dothi Voidwalker. It is black, black, creature, Dothi Rogue, 3/2 with shadow. So again, like, that means this creature can block or be blocked by only creatures with shadow. It's not too relevant. Well, kind of. If a card would be put into an opponent's graveyard from anywhere, instead exile it with a void counter on it. And then it also says tap, sacrifice it, choose an exiled card an opponent owns with a void counter on it. You may play it this turn without paying its mana cost. So, this card came out, and I was like, okay, 3/2 with shadow, whatever. Oh, it can, like, it's graveyard hate. It's asymmetrical, it only affects your opponents, so that's nice. And then it's exiling them from anywhere, like the hand or from the field, so that's nice as well. And then, like, that alone, it's like, oh, whatever. But then the last ability of, like, sacrificing itself to potentially get one of your opponent's really good spells, that's pretty good. I say that, like, this card's, like, pretty decent. People were overhyping this thing to hell. Like, it's not busted, it's not OP, it's fine, guys. It's fine.
Yeah, I mean,
it's just
being
fine.
Able to cast any card that was exiled for free is nice, but I mean, you also have to put in some work to get them to kind of fill up their graveyard, and it's not, and so I think best case scenario, you'd like Thoughtseize or Duress, trying to think of, or Grief, I guess. Pick a card, get it to be discarded. It has high potential, but like, I think people are only seeing the high potential, where it's probably going to get you like some value. It's a good card, but it's not like as good as people are saying.
I do like the tension where, you know, part of you wants to like make the most of that shadow where like you just chip in for three because it's basically unblockable in this format. And but then if you do that, like, unless you're doing weird stuff like untapping an instant speed or giving a vigilance or something weird, like that means you're not able to tap and sacrifice it to like cast their thing for free. So I like how there's like built-in tension within this card.
I'll let you read the next card, Blake, because I want to talk about the two cards after that.
Okay, yeah, that's solid. All right, now we're in red, and I'm going to talk about Harmonic Prodigy. It is one in a red creature, human wizard. That's a 1/3 with prowess. And the main important thing is this ability that says, if an ability of a shaman or another wizard you control triggers, that ability triggers an additional time. So there are just, like, so many fucking commanders throughout the years that are either wizards or shamans. Like, there's Jaleva, there's Gen, Kess, Marchesa, Kaikar, Nekusar. Like, I could literally go on for a long while. There's just so many commanders that have been printed and will be printed in the future. And this is just only 2 mana. It's super easy to cast early on. And, like, then you just cast your commander and then just synergize with those specific commanders. And I don't know, if there's one thing that I've learned over these years is that, like, just doubling value is, like, really good. Like, look at, like, Yarok and, like, fucking, I don't know, like, there's a bunch of, like, commanders that, like, double shit. And, like, it's just valuable. And I think the deck that might want this is, like, the most is, like, CEDH Anala decks. Don't quote me on that, though. I'm not a CEDH player. I just think this card is solid. It's solid.
I definitely agree with that. Wizard Tribal is a popular type, and I think this could easily be slotted into those. And Prowess, also a pretty good ability.
Mm-hmm.
Alright, next we have Breya's Apprentice, 2 and a red, artifact creature, human artificer. When Breya's Apprentice enters the battlefield, create a 1/1 colorless Thopter artifact creature token with flying. And then you have tap, sacrifice an artifact, choose one. Exile the top card of your library. Until the end of your next turn, you may play that card. And then target creature gets +2/+0 until end of turn. So I added this card because, and I still feel like, at the time of writing this, I got little to nothing in the set that I was super excited for. So I had to find the small victories in things, and this is one of them.
It's like you're grasping at straws here. Like, come yeah. on, give me something good.
I mean, I think this is good for, you know, Purphoros, not to get too specific. Just because it's a 2/3, so 3 mana for 2 bodies, that's 4 damage to all your opponents. Then you can also use the Thopter token to then, you know, gain you card advantage by exiling the top card of your library, and then next turn after that, you can also then just sack Breya in general to also get some advantage there. So I think this is pretty decent. I'm excited to test it out because I think it has some potential, and I got some cool altar ideas in mind. But yeah, so I'm immediately going to move into this next one, Dragon's Rage Channeler, which I think is actually going to be a much better card in general for red decks. So red, just a red, creature, human shaman. Whenever you cast a non-creature spell, surveil 1. And if you forget what surveil does, it is like scry, so you look at the top card of your library, but you may put that card into your graveyard instead. So you look at it and you say, do I want to keep it at the top of the library, or do I want to put it into the graveyard? So it's card filtering a little bit. We saw Surveil in Guilds of Ravnica, I believe, the first set where we returned to Ravnica.
It was one of those Ravnicas.
Yeah, and it was a Dimir mechanic, so it's interesting that, you know, now we're seeing it on, like, a mono-red card. But I think this is great, and it's only one red mana, and if you're just casting a bunch of spells, you're now able to look at cards, fill up your graveyard, and I think, you know, the decks where, like, you're running, like, Underworld Breach or, like, Gaia's Will, you're then going to have a lot of options, and you're going to continue to cast spells from your graveyard, fill up your graveyard, cast more spells. I think this will be great. You just kind of have to be a little cautious of the Delirium.
Yeah.
But I think, like, if this is out on the field, you're not going to care too much, because also if it dies during combat or whatever, if you then need to go to the next main phase, and you have Underworld Breach, you can then just recast it during your second main phase. So, it's pretty good.
Did you read the Delirium?
Did I? Delirium, as long as there are four or more card types among cards in your graveyard, Dragon's Rage Channeler gets +2/+2, has flying, and attacks each combat if able. So that's still a pretty good Delirium ability, even if it has Delirium, because then it's a 3/3 flyer.
Yeah, it just kind of sucks. It's kind of a downside because, you know, you have to attack, and you might be forced to attack into someone who has blockers. Although in EDH, you can usually find someone who doesn't have a flyer.
You can usually find someone who doesn't have a flyer, and I think with the ability to surveil, and if you're casting enough cards, you might be able to, you know, wait a bit before you get to the threshold of four or more card types. So that might be a little easier, or that might be a little harder to get to than people think. So, solid one drop for red.
Yep, I agree. Alright, this next red card is Tavern Scoundrel, 1 in a red, creature, human rogue, 1/3. And whenever you win a coin flip, create 2 treasure tokens. And that has an activated ability of 1, tap, sacrifice another permanent, flip a coin. So this is obviously going to go in the 99 of various coin flip commander decks, which, again, I've kind of previously mentioned in the last episode. Coin flip commanders seem to be getting printed a little bit more often. They seem pretty popular, like Oban, Zendersplit, Rakdos the Showstopper, Quark, Sakashima, and now we have Yesri, or however it's pronounced. And then, as we mentioned again in the previous episode, Quark Slum has just been skyrocketing in price, and this is kind of like the next best thing. So, specifically in coin flip commander decks, this is like basically a staple. Yeah. Go for it. We can move on to green now, though.
For sure. Alright. This one, I feel like all three of these are going to be pretty popular. So this first one is Timeless Witness. 2 green-green, creature human shaman. When it enters the battlefield, return target card from your graveyard to your hand. Reminds me of another card. And then it has Eternalize, 5 green-green. So exile this card from your graveyard, create a token that's a copy of it, except it's a 4/4 black zombie human shaman with no mana costs, eternalize only as a sorcery, and it's a 2/1.
Yeah, so it's obviously a reference to Eternal Witness. It's basically the same effect, but like it costs an additional colorless more with the upside of it basically gaining eternalize. Yeah, Ewit is basically a staple. I think this is close enough to basically become a staple as well. It's just solid. It's a solid card.
I agree with that. I mean, Eatwit is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 7. It's the 7th most played green card behind all your, like, Cultivate Kodama's Reach. The only creature that's above it is Sakura Tribe Elder, so
yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, green loves these kind of cards, so, you know, running this again, not bad.
Not just green decks, it's just good all around. Alright, this next card, I am fucking pumped. Alright. Oh god, yes. So this
I
next card,
I was so visibly upset. Like, you can, like, when you meet Annie, just, like, ask her about the night where I was, like, you know, pacing around, and I was like, why the fuck did Blake get this?
Yes.
All right, just read it so we can move on.
All right, so this baby is called Sanctum Weaver. It is one and a green. It's an enchantment creature dryad that's a 0/2. And it has an activated ability of tap, add X mana of any one color, where X is the number of enchantments you control. So, God, yes. So, in some ways, it's like Sarah's Sanctum, that land that taps for white mana proportional to the number of enchantments you control. But this is different because it's like a mana dork, basically. And it can, it's proportional, it's also proportional to the number of enchantments you control. It's any one color, so you're not just limited to generating white. This, in some ways, is kind of like Bloomtender and Faerberal Elder, where it's just these mana dorks that essentially like generate more than one mana. And specifically, I'm comparing it to those two other cards because you can generate infinite mana with auras like Pemmon's Aura and Freed from the Reel. Because you start, you put the aura on this, it immediately taps for two blue, and then you tap, untap, tap, untap, and then you filter through the blue into all any color you need. So that's just fucking amazing. And then this itself is an enchantment, so it'll synergize with enchantment-focused decks, and it's just so good. Oh, fuck yeah. Like, when I saw this card, I was like, you guys were talking in the group chat, and you're like, just wait till Blake sees this, and then I finally see it, like, after you guys sent that message a couple minutes ago, and I'm like, oh my god, yes! This is, like, everything I want. This is, like, literally everything I want. I got this, and then I got the enchantment, the Commander Enchantress Scythus. Oh, I'm just so happy.
I hope Forgotten Realms brings me some absolute bangers, because like I said, I feel like I didn't get as much, like, I guess, like, I did get good cards, but like these are just, you know, Blake written all over them.
Like, these could not have been better. Like, they could not have been better for me. Like, this is great.
Alright, so our last green card is Tireless Provisioner. 2 green, creature, elf scout, landfall. Whenever a land enters the battlefield under your control, create a food token or a treasure token. So, food is an artifact with 2 tap, sacrifice this artifact, you gain 3 life. Or, treasure is an artifact with tap, sacrifice this artifact, add 1 mana of any color. And it's a 3/2. And it's an uncommon. So I actually think, pick it up. This is good.
Yeah, so like it's like obviously referencing Tireless Tracker. It's like in the name and the art, but like I think it's much better to compare it to like Lotus Cobra, where it's basically like landfall, make mana. And so like it's got some upsides where like it costs a colorless more to cast, but you get the benefits of like certain elf synergies, and then you also, there's also some benefits where like you don't have to like use that. You don't have to decide what color of mana it's going to be right away, and then you can even choose to use that mana in other phases because it's a treasure token. You don't have to use it right away. You can use it in another phase. Also, I'm saying, like, I keep on saying treasure token because, like, true, you could make food tokens, but, like, most of the time you're making treasure. This is just, like, I'll just say that, like, most landfall commander decks want this card. It is just so good.
No, I agree with that. Definitely worth it. Yeah, I think it's just really, it's not a matter of like, is this card good? It's just like, how good is this card? Mm-hmm. Like,
I think it's very good.
Okay. So, I actually, as you'll notice in our notes, Blake, I just dropped in a card real quick because it was actually another card I wanted to talk about, but forgot about it. But it goes all the way back to white. Mm-hmm. And that is, so before we move on to multicolor, we got Out of Time. And it's one white-white enchantment. When Out of Time enters the battlefield, untap all creatures, then phase them out until Out of Time leaves the battlefield. Put a time counter on Out of Time for each creature phased out this way. Then it has Vanishing. So at the beginning of your upkeep, remove a time counter from this enchantment. When the last is removed, sacrifice it. So this is actually very interesting because you play this card and you untap all the creatures. It doesn't matter whether it's non-token or token creatures. You just phase out all creatures and then put a time counter on this equal to that. So this could get very big. And because you're phasing them out, you could phase out someone's commander and then they don't have access to it for potentially 5-10 turns. And because you don't get the option of putting that back into the command zone. So this is kind of like somewhat removal. And I think then just everyone's going to like focus their attention on out of time. So then you can, you know, go off and do other things.
Right. So it's basically like a 3-mana board wipe because like this is commander. Like there's always some players who have like a few creatures out, or even if everyone only has like one creature out, like that's basically like 4 turns where like those creatures don't come back. So like it is an enchantment. So like, oh, that, so I did look at this when it first came out. And it does something very unique. I like that it's 3 mana, so like you can just basically board wipe and then go about doing whatever else you want to do with your mana. But yeah, like it's going to be difficult because like there's so often times where like you already have your commander out, and then which case you probably aren't wanting to cast this because you're going to lose your commander because of the phasing. I don't know. I thought about all the decks that like would actively want to do this effect, but it's like it, I think it screws them like themselves up enough where I'm not sure people want to actually play this card.
I think it might see more play just because I think it'll see play in not necessarily the decks, but the people who know how to sequence their cards. Because to be honest, I feel like, and I know I'm not, I'm guilty of this, but like. Sequencing how you play your cards, I think, you know, with this card, you're really going to have to think about how you play it, when you play it, to get the most benefit so it doesn't really affect you. Like, you cast this, then in response, maybe do, what is it, Teferi's Protection. So you phase out all your creatures, and then this comes in, phases out all creatures that your opponents control. And then next turn, the Teferi's Protection phase will end. You come in with all your stuff, but your opponents are still going to have 5, 6, 7 turns before they're able to get their creatures back.
Yeah, okay. I'm still pretty mad on it. We can move on into multicolor, though. Guy, do you want to read these next 2 cards? Because I'll be honest, like I don't really have too much to say about them compared to like other cards.
We'll talk about them real quick because I feel I feel like these are worth talking about because they're actually kind of what the set was designed around. And that is, so first, Dakon Shadow Slayer, white, blue, black, legendary planeswalker Dakon. He enters the battlefield with a number of loyalty counters on him equal to the number of lands you control. Which is a reference to the original Dakon Black Blade, which got like power equal to the number of lands you control. Which isn't really an Esper thing, but who cares? +1, surveil 2. So look at the top card, and then you can rearrange your library or put cards into the graveyard. -3, exile target creature. And -6, you may put an artifact card from your hand or graveyard onto the battlefield. Yeah, so only mentioning him because. So there's Dakon, and then this next one, which is Gaeadrone Dahita. 1, blue, black, red. Legendary Planeswalker Dahita, protection from all permanents with corruption counters on them. +1, each opponent loses 2 life and you gain 2 life. Put a corruption counter on up to 1 other target creature or planeswalker. -3, gain control of target creature or planeswalker until end of turn. Untap it and put a corruption counter on it. It gains haste until end of turn. -7, gain control of each permanent with a corruption counter on it. Alright, so Dakon was, I believe, went up against Gaeadrone. I know that they have some kind of connection where they're like enemies, so that's why they're both here. And then Peru, the elder dragon that we talked about last episode, is the elder dragon that Dakon slayed. So there's a lot of, like, Forthos.
A lot of lore there.
Yeah, so that's why I guess we're mentioning them, just because I think there is some relevance as to the set.
This is the first time we've ever seen Gaiadrone.
Yeah, and that was the first Dakon Planeswalker card.
Yep.
Because the other one was a legendary creature. I do think Gaiadrone is a little more relevant and actually pretty good, because she can protect herself by putting counters onto threats, and you get the added bonus of life loss and gain. And in a Super Friends deck, this will be more relevant because she can then stick around for a turn cycle or two and easily get up to that -7, you know, gain control of a couple things. Probably, like, your opponent's best stuff, so not bad.
I'll be honest, I don't expect to see them played that much, but who knows, prove me wrong.
Yeah, I don't expect them to be played much outside of Super Friends decks, but I do think that they will probably slot into Super Friends decks.
Ah, okay. Alright, this next multicolor card is Ignoble Hierarch. It is a single green mana. It's a creature, human goblin, 0/1.
Goblin Shaman.
Yeah, Goblin Shaman. So, it has Exalted, and then it can tap to add black, red, or green. So it's clearly a reference to Noble Hierarch. So, like, if Noble Hierarch is to Bant, then this is to Jund. It's a great, amazing mana dork. I expect to play against it a good amount. Like it. Like, in some ways, it's, like, arguably worse because it's not an elf. You lose a lot of, like, elf synergies, which most mana dorks are. But, like, it's a goblin, and, like, there are a whole bunch of goblin synergies. So, it's, like, potato, potato, whatever. It's a good card. It will see play. I will buy it.
Yeah. I definitely think that's, like, the one downside, but, you know, Jund, I don't think... Jund, in the sense of, like, Jund, graveyard, lands, I don't think they care too much about elf synergy, so the fact that it's not an elf probably isn't going to hinder them that much. They're going to run this because it's a good mana dork.
Right, and kind of on a similar vein is this next card, which is Goblin Anarchomancer. Sorry. It is red and a green for a 2/2 creature goblin shaman that says each spell you cast that's red or green costs one less to cast. So it's comparable to like a cycle of cards known as like the familiar cycle. There was like Thunderscape, familiar, Thornscape, familiar, Sunscape, familiar, Stormscape, and Nightscape. But this one is for Gruul. And so now it makes me curious, like, if they're going to one day, like, complete this guild cycle, basically. They're going to make the four remaining ones in the future. And another kind of neat thing that I noted is just, like, the new wording templating. So, who knows? Like, I've seen, like, a little bit of each of these, like, quote-unquote familiars played, because it's, like, a affordable card that's, like, decent cost reduction. That I have seen like budget decks. So I thought I'd mention it real quick. We can move on into the kind of like arguably like the last section of this episode, which is like all the colorless. So it's like all the lands, all the artifacts, all the colorless stuff.
All right. So Urza's Saga. This is a saga. So as it enters the battlefield and after your draw step, you will add a lore counter. So it enters the battlefield, lore counter 1, Urza's Saga gains tap. Add colorless. Chapter 2. Urza's Saga gains 2. Tap. Create a 0/0 colorless construct artifact creature token with the creature. With this creature gets +1/+1 for each artifact you control. And then third, search your library for an artifact card with mana cost 0 or 1. Put it onto the battlefield, then shuffle. I'm going to say some things and then, Blake, you can read the list, but I don't think that this is going to be as much of a staple in decks as people think, because, like, I don't know about you, Blake, but everyone I saw after this card came out was like, this is going to get me Sol Ring turn 3? No, it's not. Like, it's not always going to come down turn one, so why do you think it's going to get you Soul Ring turn three every time? And, I don't know, there's... What if you don't run Soul Ring? Sorry. What if you've already played your Soul Ring and you don't have a card that costs zero or one? Because, Blake, can you read off your list, please?
Yeah, so there are like a handful of pretty good artifacts that cost zero or one. There's like Sensei's Divining Top, Soul Ring, as you mentioned, Mana Crypt, Amulet of Vigor, Chrome Mox, Mox Opal, Mox Diamond, Lion's Eye Diamond, Expedition Map, Skull Clamp, Mana Vault, Lotus Petal, Jeweled Lotus, and then there's even more, but there are many powerful artifacts that you can get with this card.
Yeah, so in the decks where you have all of these, sure, I think that this is worthwhile because you're going to have options, but you're not able to go and find, like, artifact lands because those don't have a mana cost, and this is specifically saying that you need a mana cost 0 or 1, so yeah. Those have to be in the card. It's interesting because I think I said Enchantment Land, Urza yeah. Saga. So it is a Urza card type, which, you know, we've seen on, like, the Tron lands, and there was another one, I believe. And it is a saga, so it is an enchantment land. It's the first of its kind. Maybe yeah. We'll see more in the future, but I don't know.
I would love to see more enchantment lands, if they're good.
Similar to how they had artifact lands, creating a cycle of just enchantment land might be interesting, but who knows?
Oh, this next card is a little spicy. It is Diamond Lion. It costs 2 colorless and is a 2/2 artifact creature cat. And it says, tap, discard your hand, sacrifice the lion, and add 3 mana of any one color. Activate only as an instant. So this is very clearly, like, a reference and comparable to Lion's Eye Diamond, but it's noticeably, like, slower. By making a creature, it is arguably weaker because it's affected by, like, summoning sickness. You can't just tap it right away. And its mana value is 2 instead of 0. And then it's restricted even further because you can only activate it at instant speed, which I know myself and a lot of other people were confused. I still don't know the exact, like, niche things in which you can and can't do because of that wording. But it's slightly worse than the original LED because of that.
LED is a very hard card to play, and I have to preface, like, because I run it, and... I also can't quite speak to activate only as an instant because I play it very, I'm just using it as, like, a ritual, pretty much. I'm not, like, trying to crack it in response. But I do know, like, you know, you tap, discard your hand, and sacrifice Diamond Lion. So you can't respond to that with cards in your hand because the discarding your hand is part of the cost. So you can't, like, discard your hand before all this happens. I'm going to play Vampiric Tutor or whatever, just as an example. You're discarding your hand. So I don't even think this is, like, a budget option for Diamonds, for Lion's Eye Diamond, just because it's nowhere near as functional.
Yeah, but, like, at the same time, most people don't just have $300 to drop.
You think Lion's Eye Diamond's still $300?
Last I checked.
Oh, I'm pretty sure it is, like, up there now. Oh. Okay, $465.
Oh my god. Okay, moving on to the next card. We're gonna talk about... I guess I'll just read it, too.
Go for it.
Sort of... Hearth and Home. It is 3 colorless artifact equipment. Equipped creature gets +2/+2 and has protection from green and white. Whenever equipped creature deals combat damage to a player, exile up to 1 target creature you own. Then search your library for a basic land card. Put both cards onto the battlefield under your control, then shuffle, and it has equipped 2. So clearly this is a continuation as part of the sort of X and Y cycle. And it's a lot of people have been talking a lot about this card. People have been talking about the fact that it's just pretty good. It's like it blinks your creature it can basically ramp you. There's been a lot of talk about it.
We are two away now. Two away from completing all 10.
Yep.
I expect we'll see the last two next time we return to Mirrodin, which I've said before, but I believe it will be probably next week. Not next week, next year. Yeah, next week they're just like, whole new set.
It'll feel like next week. There's just always new cards coming out.
Yeah. But yeah, so we're missing the Pro Black Blue and the Pro Red Green. But yeah, this one's decent. Or, I mean, not even decent. It's a pretty good card. Sword of the Amonis is in 33,000 decks. I think that this can easily slot into some of those equipment-based decks as well. So, pretty good.
Yep. I agree. Mm-hmm. All right, next equipment. I can just mention it really quick. I felt like it was worth including, just to briefly say. Needle Assist, it is 3 colorless artifact equipment. Equipped to, it's a living weapon, and it says whenever equipped creature gets +1/+1 for each artifact and or enchantment you control. I don't have a lot to say about this card. Really, it's just like, there are equipment-focused decks, and this just makes the cut. This is now in them. We can move on to the next card. It's good.
Yeah, so this next one is Academy Manufacturer. 3 mana, artifact creature, assembly worker. If you create a clue, food, or treasure token, instead create one of each, and it's a 1/3. So I wanted to include this, just because we've talked kind of before how, treasure tokens are getting pretty popular, so...
They're just making cards that say, like, make a treasure, or make some amount of treasure. Just, like, it seems like the new, like, main thing that they're doing every set, which is good.
Yeah, and I mean, so I think, kind of similar to when we talked about that one red dragon, this is only going to get more popular, because if you, you know, create any kind of token, you create 3 of those. And I actually, just to kind of reference some of the release notes given, so for every set they kind of talk about some of the more specifics of cards. Mm-hmm. I found this kind of funny. So let's say you have Academy Manufacturer out. If you control 2 Academy Manufacturers and would create some number of clue, food, or treasure tokens, you will instead create 3 times that many clue tokens, 3 times that many food tokens, and 3 times that many treasure tokens. If you control 18 Academy Manufacturers, and it said you figure it out how to get there, and would create some number of clue, food, or treasure tokens, you will instead create 129,140,163 times that many clue tokens, treasure tokens, and food tokens.
That's a lot.
Yeah, and I think in decks where, you know, you can create a lot of artifacts and then create, you know, just one clue, or like, I think this goes into like any deck that cares about food, because you still get the food token, but then you also
like Asmo.
Yeah, like Asmo, Guillaume. People like food, and I think that this will be a good card to include.
I like food too. I'm probably gonna eat after this podcast.
Good. All right. Next is Void Mirror.
Motherfucker.
2 mana artifact. Whenever a player casts a spell, if no colored mana was spent to cast it, counter that spell. So, we play with Park, who plays a colorless deck. Even then, I don't think that this is a card I would want to play, just because I think that is really mean. I think this was made really for Modern in mind to kind of pose Tron decks. So it's not instant bannable. It does turn off those decks that really do rely on the colorless, but if you do have lands that still can create colored mana, mm-hmm. and let's say like 6 of your mana is colorless, and then you have like 1 red, and then you cast Karn Liberated or whatever, you still get this. You still get Karn Liberated because you use colored mana. It's only when you are only using colorless mana to pay for a spell. So, right. I think this isn't nearly as bad, and again, just made for Modern. If you want to play this to like dick over your friends, go for it. I don't think that's fun though, so yeah.
Yeah, on that note, it's like, if you're thinking of playing this, like, just to fuck over, like, that one person who plays a colorless deck in EDH, like, instead, like, just don't be an asshole and, like, instead improve your own deck. Like, either that or just ask the person to, like, play a different deck or play a less powerful deck and just be a mature adult about it, because that is one thing that always kind of annoys me when people, like, start teching in cards that are, like, generally really bad and, like, it doesn't even support your deck, but it's just actively fucking over, like, hard fucks, like, your deck. And it's, like, that's just very immature and, like, mean. I don't like it. I know people talk about it a lot online, and it's not something that I think the community should encourage or do.
Yeah, I mean, teching in to kind of shift to your meta is okay, like, you know, kind of how we talked about endurance, but that doesn't turn off the deck completely.
Nah, like, so this completely turns off a colorless deck. Like, just, like, put this, right, like, down turn one or two, and then, like, they might as well scoop, like, because they're not going to be able to cast anything. And that's just a dick move.
All right, what's next?
All right, next up is Soul Talisman. It is an artifact that taps for two colorless, but it has suspend three and costs one. So it's obviously Soul Ring with suspend three. And so because of that, it's worst in, like, almost every way. Like, it kind of reminds me of, like, Lotus Bloom and Mox Tantalite, which almost see no play in this format. And I don't think this will either. Because turns out, like, suspending three, like, is just too long to wait for mana sources for most people.
I think so. And I think, you know, unless if you are able to get, like, the turn one Soul Talisman, it's not worth it. The only other decks that I can see you running this in, aside from the decks that, you know, Cascade, is, like, maybe this is... I don't even know if you'd, like, swap this in for a Cascade deck, because you're already...
Does this work with Ozgear?
That's what I was about to get to, is, like, you can put this in Ozgear. If you have it in the graveyard, then you can create two Soul Talismans without having to suspend either, which is the same that you can do for Mox Tantalite. But that was it.
But again, for most people, like, 99.9% of Commander decks, not worth playing. Not worth running.
Right.
I guess I can read this next one really quick here, too. It is Caldera Complete. It is seven colorless legendary artifact equipment with equip seven. It's a living weapon. It's indestructible. An equipped creature gets +5/+5. It has first strike, trample, indestructible, haste, and whenever this creature deals combat damage to a creature, exile that creature. So, you know, just, like, fuck manually assembling Caldera, like, all five pieces of Exodia or whatever. Just play this, and, like, you basically have made Caldera. It's like if you took Shield, Helm, and Sword of Caldera, and you just said, fuck it, let's just fucking give it to them. Let's just make a single card that makes Caldera.
So the two things that I want to mention about this card is, first, Living Weapon, which we didn't address with, what is it, Needlesis? But that was actually eroded a little bit when this equipment enters the battlefield, create a 0/0 black Phyrexian Germ creature token.
Oh, yeah.
So that's kind of relevant, and I think it'll be more relevant again when we return to Mirrodin or, like, new Phyrexia. The other thing, too, that I've seen some people ask, can this be your commander? Short answer, no. If you want it to be your commander, I mean, talk it over with your playgroups beforehand.
Rule zero,
but
Yeah,
but I also think that this one's a little more difficult in the sense of, like, what is the commander then? Is it the Germ token, or is it the artifact? And by giving this to another creature, does that new creature become your commander? And there's just a little too much rules wonkiness where if you do rule zero it, I think you really need to, like, talk to your playgroup and set the expectations for what your commander is, so nobody gets butthurt when it's like, oh no, you're gonna kill the Germ, but I'm gonna then, like, you know, attach this to something else at instant speed, so, you know, you miss my commander. And yeah, it's like that
is tough. It is gonna be, like, a bit of a rules nightmare, because generally the best way to think about it is like that physical card, the actual physical card, is your commander, and that usually that usually answers like 99% of questions. But I don't know how that would work in this case. Yeah, it's just, it would be messy.
Yeah. So if you do it, talk it with your playgroup first. Set expectations. That's it. Last card, Yavimaya, Cradle of Growth, legendary land. Each land is a forest in addition to its other land types.
Wow.
Wow.
Shit.
This is nice.
Yeah. Yeah. So, should I just kind of talk about this card a lot?
Go for it.
All right. So, to start, it's basically a green Urborg, Tomb of Yawgmoth. So, Urborg is good because it synergizes with, like, Cabal Coffers. Urborg can just, like, color fix yourself. It's played a lot, and Yavimaya is basically the green version of it. It's going to synergize with a lot of landfall decks. I think it's going to see play in mono green decks, so it can fix some like utility lands if they are just not running all forests. I do suspect that it'll be played in 2 to 3 color decks, and maybe even 4 or 5 color decks, if those decks are on a budget and you can't afford the super nice expensive lands that'll color fix you every single time. Aaron Forsyth, one of the key members at WotC, has said that this like cycle of like Urborg and now Yavimaya, it's not likely to be completed in a modern legal set because of cards like Balakut and Boiling Seas and Flash Fires, which are all spells that either specifically destroy all islands or destroy all planes, or Balakut is just hard synergy with mountains. So it's unlikely we'll get the red, blue, or white versions of these cards in modern legal sets. So that might mean like, oh, well, maybe we'll get like sets that aren't modern. But then I know for a fact, listening somewhere, that this was really made simply because Urborg originally, like, it was asked, like, why wasn't this green? So now they're basically, quote-unquote, correcting it and making a green one. So I don't know if this is actually ever going to be completed. It might not.
Yeah, I mean, Gavin kind of hinted that there is potential for them to finish the set, but, you know, not in a modern legal set, so maybe we could see them in, I don't know, maybe another Commander Legends product kind of thing.
Maybe. That'd be cool. I like this kind of effect.
I like it too. I think the green one, so Yavimaya, I think this is also pretty good, and just because, you know, having this out will help, you know, make sure you're always able to hit those other land drops that off of like, or not hit the land drops. It will always enable you to play your green spells like Cultivate or Godama's Reach, because you'll always have access to green mana, get more lands, have green mana always available to you, but at the same time, it could also be other colors. So that's pretty nice, and yeah, I mean, it kind of made sense in black because, like, corruption.
Yeah, like, it corrupts your opponent's lands, you know?
Corrupts your lands, opponent's lands, like, it's, like, all one. This kind of makes sense because, like, trees grow everywhere.
Can I pull you
like,
on that?
Sure. I guess, like, the only other one where, like, it doesn't... I mean, all right, let's flood the world, you know, create a bunch of islands. Let's, you know, go back to the beginning where the Earth was a bunch of, like, molten... that creates mountains, and I feel like the plains one, it would be the hardest to like stretch a reasoning for it to become a land, but
who knows? We'll find out.
Yeah, alright. Alright, so let's just move into like what's the best new 99. What do you got, Blake?
So there's not really like any one that particularly shines. Like, I know there's maybe some commenters where it's like, oh, like the Grave Hate creature and like shut up. I think it's probably going to be the one we just talked about, which is Yavimaya, Cradle of Growth, because one thing that I've personally learned doing these set reviews is I always underestimate just how much people put lands into their decks and just like how, because like I was going like EDH rec and be like, oh, how popular were those modal double-faced cards that were lands? And they were like some of the most adopted cards in the set. And like that's just one example. Like I'm always underestimating just how much people adopt lands. Even if I think that they're kind of mediocre or shitty lands, people adopt them. So I'm hedging my bets, and I'm just going to say this new land. Mm-hmm. And then
okay,
I think you'll probably agree with me, but that Esper Sentinel, that white one drop that draws you cards, everyone was so excited about that one, and like it's just some of the most efficient white card advantage. So I think that'll see a lot of play too.
Yeah, I mean, I'm up there in terms of probably going to be the most adopted card between Yavimaya and Esper Sentinel.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if there's one particular card that stands out as like the strongest. Like, there's no there's no Dockside Extortionist. There's no Narset Parter of Veils. There's no one card where it's like once this gets out, it's a problem.
Yeah.
The Voidwalker is good, but again, not as good as people think. I mean, yeah. I guess we'll see, because I feel like after Modern Horizons, there was also kind of a period of time in between when we were kind of like testing things out, you know. So yeah. it'll take some time. Solitude is also solid, just because again, Swords to Plowshares.
I also think like maybe that Eternal Witness like creature, but the thing is, I think a lot of people have already kind of forgotten about that, because it's not like flashy and exciting like Esper Sentinel is.
It's not new to green, because green has already gotten it. It's just like, oh yeah, we get another EWIT.
Yeah, and I think a lot of people just like, oh yeah, like we just kind of forgot about it. But I think if enough people remember, like that will probably be adopted highly. So that's kind of what I perceive to be the most popular new 99 cards. Do you have any like final thoughts? You know, stepping back a bit, maybe one or two steps, and like just looking at this set as a whole. Like, what are some of your final thoughts? Because I was starting to like compare this set to Modern Horizons 1, and I mean, I said it earlier, but like, with how much Modern Horizons 1 fucked up other formats, it makes sense that like the power level seems to be down a bit, but they still managed to make really interesting cards, and like there are a good number of cards that I think will either A, be commanders, or B, played in the 99. I feel like this set is just solid.
It's a solid set. I think from what I've seen, most players are ecstatic about it, saying it's probably one of the best sets that they've seen in a long time.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard for me to say whether or not this is actually powered down from Modern Horizons or if it's powered up. I'm sure there's going to be something that will break Modern in here, but like I think Grief might do it, but
who knows? I don't play that format. Who knows?
Well, I don't yet, but I might soon. But yeah, I think there are a lot of powerful cards that came out in this set, and again, it's just going to take us a while to recognize which ones those really are and which ones are going to have the most impact, because you know, we might get some more cards that come out later this year that, you know, tie in directly with some of these other ones that, you know, just really showcase how good they are. I will just say, like, don't wait a ton of time to buy these cards. Try to get them fairly quickly, because you don't want it to get to the point where, like, you know, some of these cards become chase and end up becoming super expensive. I know I said that it will be printed demand, but that doesn't mean that, you know, when you open up a card, it won't be in high demand as well. So give it, don't immediately buy them, don't pre-order, but do get them somewhat quickly.
All right. Well, with that being said, I think we have managed to review this entire set.
I think so, too.
Yeah. I want to thank all of you so much for getting through this set and listening. We are the Wizard Staff Podcast. You can find us on
like iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, YouTube, anywhere else you listen to your podcasts. Make sure to leave a like and review. You can follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at WizardStaff101. And then you can send us an email at thewizardstaff101@gmail.com if you want to bitch and complain about how stupid we are. Again, we want to thank you guys so much for listening, and we hope to hear from you next time. Peace out.
Peace.